Ah, psyched you out on that one, didn't we, Internet? Ooh, this sounds smooth as butter right now.
I expected those drums to be a little louder. Why does it sound like I have no voice? I gotta clear that throat. Let's do it in the mic like Joe Rogan does all the goddamn time and drives me crazy.
Internet, we are coming at you from the Devil's Bench. And I've been told by a couple people that, that there's like a sign somewhere in Brantford saying that the Devil's Bench is moving. And we're totally not. So I don't know where that sign is, but we're totally not moving. 436 Colburn Street East.
Maybe it's because you thought it was 436 Colburn Street West that one episode.
No, I said 426.
That's it.
My other shop is at a 426.
Understandable.
It's a wonder I don't have things shipped back and forth. Like, I can just screw it up all the time. My name is Bill, otherwise known as sometimes Prol, sometimes You Only Wish, sometimes Tango November, because I can't decide on... I feel like I've made some sort of change and I need a new gamer identity, but I don't really like Tango November. I like it, but I don't love it yet. So I'm using it for the time being. Anyways, don't bother trying to find me on social media. Who are you?
I am the friendly neighborhood safe ninja, and I'm here to remind you that taking your foot off the gas pedal is almost as effective as hitting the brakes in certain situations. Everybody needs to get punched in the head every once in a while. And the person who pulled... Okay, I'm actually going to tell this story because I haven't told you this yet.
Okay.
So, I'm driving to work. I drive down Highway 24. And it's just a special location where... Like, if you're driving down, like, King George Road, right? And some dude goes to make a left, and no one's coming. And you can see he's clearly going to make that left-hand turn.
Yeah.
And you just slow up a little bit, let him go, say, hey, buddy, have fun wherever you're going. And then you keep driving. Now, if you're on Highway 24, the appropriate response, if someone's about to just take a gentle left-hand turn, they've already started it, and you're behind them, is to speed up and fly around them at, you know, 40 over the speed limit on the gravel shoulder. Give him no time to finish his turn, because that's unacceptable. It's just, it's a different world on that road, man. So I'm doing like 105, and then this person pulls out to pass me, has been behind me the whole way.
Yeah.
And pulls out to pass me at about 106 and three quarters.
Yeah.
So I'm driving along, and all of a sudden I look over, and there's this person right beside me, like we're on a two-lane road. And I'm like, what are you doing? And then I realize that they're going to pass me, but the guy behind me has already, like, closed the gap.
Oh, yeah.
And then so I'm like, am I going to have to slow down?
Yeah.
To let this person pass me?
How dare you?
So she pulls in front of me, and I said I was doing 105. She pulls in front of me and then, like, slams on the brakes and proceeds to do about 98. And I'm just like...
I mean, you should have just rammed into the back of her and accepted the consequences.
I was so, like, angry, but at the same time just so...
Baffled.
Baffled by what was happening that I just, like, allowed it. Oh, my God. It was so dumb, man.
Internet, today we're going to be doing a listener question episode.
Oh, yes.
Meaning, we throw out that invitation to ask us a question on social media. Find us. / The Devil's Bench or / The Benchcast on Facebook. And next time, you can ask us some questions. We got some good ones and a doozy to end the night off on.
Doozy.
I'm going to try my best to, like... consolidate the last 15 minutes or relegate the last 15 minutes to 15 minutes only.
All right, you know what? Usually when I ask questions on a podcast, I have to wait and I get all weird and feel weird.
Yeah.
About whether they're going to read my question. So who's the question from?
First one is from...
No, the doozy. Don't ask the question, but who's it from?
Oh, Andrew Lim.
Oh, see, now he's all excited because he's like, yeah, they're going to answer my question.
Yeah, it's the last one. Okay, so first one is from Jesse Drenters, the Dick Ripper himself.
Jesse Dr. Drenters.
And this one, you know what I kind of feel like right now? And this is completely contextual to the question.
Okay.
You are going to experience a feeling that you I don't think you really have yet.
And is that because I ate like a 2-year expired bag of chips before we started this podcast?
No, but it is similar to the small butterflies you will feel in your stomach.
Okay.
Around Christmas time, you get to have the duty of doing like the doling out of the Christmas presents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you get to do that with like the little kitties around. It's the best thing ever.
Is it because I'm fat and I look like Santa Claus? Is that what Jesse's trying to say? Is Jesse fat shaming me on my own podcast?
I'm triggered. Are you?
I'm hashtag.
Yeah. Just an open hashtag.
Just there. It's like a blank check. It's this generation's version of a blank check. It's just an empty hashtag.
The Dick Ripper wants to know, how is the safety ninja doing in his countdown to fatherhood?
I have 7 shifts left until I get to go on parental leave.
Is that it?
7 shifts.
Wow.
I don't care when the baby comes. I'm just counting through 7 days. No. Actually, the due date for the little one was actually 1 month, 2 days ago. So the 23rd, February 23rd is his due date. So
so how are you doing?
I'm super ready. Like, basically, I don't know. Like, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of picture what life's going to be like when you're an adult. I could picture any number of things, but the one constant was that, you know, my hope is that I have a good family. Like, I wanted to have a dog. Eventually that came to add in aquariums. And then I wanted to have, I always pictured, you know, because I'm a boy, I always pictured having a little boy, right? Because it's just like a little version of me running around. And I'm lucky that, you know, at least we don't know whether we'll have more than one, but our first child's going to be a son. So
yeah.
It's kind of like what I've always wanted. So I've always pictured that. Am I ready for it? No, but at least I'm like prepared for it. You know what I mean? Like,
because
you won't
yeah,
know
yeah.
what you don't know. But the only thing though is the just the process of the actual like birth process, right? Because it's like making sure that he's all put together properly, and make sure that my wife comes through it put together properly, and just I don't have any medical background, so I'm of no use to anybody from that perspective. I can't do anything to. Other than to help my wife be comfortable, I can't do anything to make sure it goes okay.
Yeah.
Like I can't stop any not good things from happening. So there, I'm dealing with like that sort of feeling of like helplessness. Not that I'm helpless,
man.
But that I can't help.
Yep.
You know. So that's pretty much the most concerning thing right now. And then, but like the, you know how people have we talked about on the podcast how people say really weird shit when they find out you're pregnant, or that like.
No, I don't think so.
It's just, it's really strange. Like,
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah,
we might
yeah,
have
yeah.
talked about that. Because that
yeah,
was
yeah.
in our prenatal class. They
yeah.
said, like, how things change for you physically. And I say, well, you know, I'm a little tired and my back hurts and just making jokes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And how have things changed for you emotionally? And then how have things changed for you socially? And it's just really funny, like, more so I've noticed than in any other aspect of my life where people are really willing to share their opinions with you. But not necessarily framing them so, oh, this is what I think. It's just like, this is what you should do type thing. Or, oh, you know you're not going to get any sleep, right? And it's just like, really? Like, was that kind of like one of those things, you know, when you're passing somebody on the street and then someone says, oh, nice day, isn't it? You're like, good, how are you? You know, like, it's
yeah.
like the words fall out of your mouth as a sentence.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those things that people are doing, you know, in passing. And maybe it comes from a good place. It's just, I just find it more interesting than anything else. Or people are like, oh, you know, you're not going to get any sleep anymore. Well, yeah, get it all out while you can now. And it's just like, oh, really? Like, that's just really such a weird thing to say to somebody, right?
Yeah, and, you know, that feeling of helplessness that you describe is a really good way to put it. Because, I mean, I can tell you, the whole process, it's like any hospital trip, man. Like, you mm-hmm. go, it's all done, and then you're home, and it's just like, whoosh.
Oh, yeah, and it's over.
It's, boom, and it's done.
Well, and you know what's funny, too? Like, my wife, we live like a very short trip from the hospital. It's not like when I grew up in the country or anything like that. So, you know, my wife has said, do you want to have the baby in the hospital or at home? And I'm like, you're having the baby. So, and I'm not a medical professional. So my opinion, I mean, I appreciate you asking my opinion, but I don't have one.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
if I did, I wouldn't have any backing for it other than just a feeling. So for me, whatever she thinks is safest for her, and her having a medical background, she'd know better than me. So she's like, well, I'd like to try and have the baby at home, knowing that if we needed to, we could transition to the hospital in a reasonable amount of time. And then that's been like a real cause of like just this interesting, like, you know, not the sharing of an opinion, but like, you know, oh, you want your baby to live, right? Like, not that bad, but kind of like that idea. They're like,
yeah.
oh, you're having it at home? And it's one of those things where it's
Man.
Like, Man, like, people have been having babies for like 1,000 years.
You want me to tell you what?
Thousands of years, I mean.
You want me to tell you what the next one is going to be?
What's this?
Breast milk versus formula. When Johnny was young, he had like a failure to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually lost weight in his first 2 weeks, and it was super scary because...
They say that's common. They said that last night in our class that's common.
It probably is.
Maybe to a certain extent.
When the family doctor sends you to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician goes, oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
And so our whole thing was, like, he's getting enough to eat, essentially, but... he's also kind of not getting enough to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, nurses, doctors, pediatricians,
yeah.
Everybody was just this, like, inundating us with no formula, no formula, no formula.
I noticed that last night because we've done, this is our second prenatal class, and one was done somewhere else, and this one's done through the health unit.
Yeah, that's one we went to.
And this one, don't get me wrong, like, it's been very informative, and I found it very helpful.
Yeah.
But there's a certain level of, like, and I mean, if you're... a quote-unquote like a medical authority, then you know you should be confident enough in what you're saying to present it as the only way, right? But the one thing I found really funny was, I mean, last night's class was about breastfeeding, right? And that I wasn't as big on, but I mean, I don't have a problem with, is what I mean meant to say. But there was a lot of people asking about like pain management, like getting an epidural and everything like that.
Yeah,
and unconsciously, every time they talked about pain management, they always talked about getting an epidural as if it was like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
And then when they talked about it consciously, they only ever told you the pros of it. And I don't know any better. I've never had one and I've never administered one. So what the fuck do I know?
Sure.
But in our last class, I felt like they informed us better by telling us, here's the benefits, here's the risks of it. You decide for yourself. And when you make any decision, you appreciate having both sides of the coin.
Yeah, yeah.
And they only talked about like the benefits of it. And then I asked, and I made a pointed effort to ask the question. I said, are there any, not necessarily drawbacks, but any considerations that people should consider
right.
When it comes to having the epidural? And they said, well, as with any procedure, there's risks and benefits. And that was it. And it's kind of like what you were saying about that almost indoctrination where it was yeah. like, they're not telling you not to do X, Y, Z, but they're presenting A as the only option.
I'll tell you, like when I mixed up the first bottle of formula
mm-hmm.
And we plugged it into his mouth. I mean, he's only eating like an ounce and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
like literally a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
But I distinctly remember there was almost this feeling of horror.
Mm-hmm, that you're like letting your kid down or something like that, right?
No.
Or
that when I plugged it in there, he drained it.
And
it
just, gotcha.
He was like, and like just, and his hands were out and he's doing that, like they kind of pucker. They do this like
yeah, thing. Yeah.
And he's doing that, like asking for more. And I was like, oh my God, he's hungry.
Yeah, yeah.
What were we thinking?
Oh, yeah.
Give
yeah.
this baby some food.
Yeah.
Give him some food.
Yeah. And I mean, from what I've taken in and what I can know, I mean, I certainly respect and appreciate the fact that, you know, if you can breastfeed your baby, that would be good for them. But they mentioned a lot of times, you know, like it's okay if you can't breastfeed, you shouldn't feel like you're, like they had said, you shouldn't feel like you're a failure or something like that. But it's like at the same time, you're presenting it like it is the
completely.
Only.
And, completely.
And don't get me wrong.
And it's so unfair to do that.
I just, you're just sounding... And maybe I had my backup just because I'm that type of person, but it just sounded like you were being really dishonest because you're saying, you know, this is the only way you should do it. You shouldn't do it any other way. But
yeah.
if you can't do it and you have to do it another way, that's fine too. And it's like, well, you're setting people up to, like, I can understand only talking about the benefits of what you find to be the most beneficial way. I absolutely respect that. But it just was painting themselves to really... maybe upset some people if it didn't work because they're like, it's the only way.
Yep.
Every other way, you shouldn't choose to... This is how it was painted. This is the only decision you should choose. But if it doesn't work, it's fine to use the others.
Yeah.
So it's like, don't choose to do the alternative. But, you know, if you have to, it's fine. And it's like, yeah, I could see some people, if it's not working for them, like I could see that really being upsetting. Luckily, like other than just being... you know, questioning the mantra, the message, to get back to the initial question. It feels good. I'm super excited. I can't wait. And then, it's just that little feeling that I'm sure every guy deals with while he's waiting for his wife to give birth to their baby is just like, is everything going to be okay? And am I going to, embarrass myself during the procedure, basically?
I did.
But, and I fully expect you. And
I did twice, actually. I'll have to tell you.
All the people we've talked with that are going to be there, like her team of health professionals and everything, right? So
yeah.
I've just said to them, I'm like, look, this is what I'm expecting. This is the kind of person I am. So I will do anything to be helpful. Tell me to get the hell out of the way if I'm not being helpful. But don't be surprised if I act a certain way, right? And then hopefully it won't happen that way. But I'm just I'm looking forward to that part being over and just looking forward to him being here.
You know what? That's the kicker, right? Nobody ever tells you the what for, like the actual what's up. Everybody's just like, oh, get ready for losing sleep. But nobody's like, this is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to you.
I talked about that too around the time when my wife and I were getting married, when everyone's like, oh, don't do it. And they say all these weird, like, little platitudes
Manisms,
and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I've done that too, like when my buddies have said that they were getting engaged or something like that. But it's like those sentences just fall out of your mouth, not as words. You don't put them together and then say them like a normal sentence. They fall out as a platitude.
Yeah.
Oh, you're never going to sleep again. What? Like, that's what you had to say?
Yeah.
It's just weird, eh?
Second question from Daisy Rainbow is related.
Oh, nice.
What video games and or movies are you looking forward to sharing with your kids as they grow?
I've been writing like a little journal.
Yeah.
To
good idea. So do I.
Eventually give to him whenever he reaches the age I decide to give it to him. Maybe when he's 3 weeks old, because I've really fallen off a cliff in terms of writing it. It's like October 19th, October 20th, October 21st, and now it's like December 23rd. January 17th. But I was telling them about some video games. Every day, every entry, I write like a song of the day to go look up. Right?
Yeah, so do I. That's funny.
That's hilarious. We are kindred spirits.
Yeah.
But I wrote the Final Fantasy VII world map theme music.
Yeah.
And talked all about like the music of the game. And I told them some of the games we've played. And I try to, like, when I mention, oh, I hung out with Bill Dungy tonight. So in that way,
yeah,
for whatever reason, if I'm not around when he reads those journals, then if he wanted to look somebody up and talk to them about me or whatever, they could, right? Rather than just being like, oh, my buddies.
And I'll flip through and be like, oh, no, this isn't right at all. Let me repaint this picture for you, son. Sit down.
Yeah. So I mentioned, last night we had Monday night game night. We played Rocket League, and
yeah,
this is how it is. And I hope to do with video game, or at least for like my kid growing up, is that I hope to help guide him in a direction that I feel is an appropriate direction without orchestrating it for him. You know what I mean?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
It's like, I don't want to, not that I could, but I don't want to tell you what to do and make sure I indoctrinate you into the things that I think and
sure
feel. But at the same time, it's like, when you have a little kid, you choose what comes into the house, basically.
Yeah.
So I really want to put a focus on him spending more time outside and less time playing video games than I did and even do now, because I'm so comfortable on a Sunday afternoon or even a Saturday when my wife works and I'm off.
Yep.
Waking up at 10 in the morning, we're waking up, getting out of bed around 10, making a nice big pot of coffee and going downstairs until about 2 o'clock and playing video games. In the wintertime, that is A-okay. But in the summertime, you don't feel it until the sun starts going down. You're like, oh, fuck, I wasted a day.
Yep.
So I want to hope that I can not limit, but kind of point and condense where we play games together. Because I still maintain that video games are probably one of the most constant sources of fun and all sorts of different things in my life. When I talk about video games and stuff like that, I mention, make sure you go outside. Who knows what video games are going to be like when he's old enough to play. But I really want to play a lot of two-player games with him. Because my brother and I kind of sort of played games together when we lived together, but not as much. Mostly sports games and stuff like that, which were fun. But games are so much different and better now, and the easy access now
yeah,
that we have Steam, rather than waiting for NHL 09 to come out, and then my brother and I play NHL 09. Because we'd both rather play our own character. So he'd have a copy in his room, and I'd have a copy in mine.
Yeah.
But I'd like to play a lot of games that we can play together, like couch games almost, because other than when we get together for parties, I don't do that. My wife doesn't. She likes to play Tetris, but that's about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, I can't think of any specific games, but Rocket League, definitely. And then, yeah, you know what? I'm drawing such a blank because most of the games we play are either all, like, MMO style.
Yeah.
Or I play single games by myself because I don't have a little buddy to play games with, right?
Specifically on my end, it kind of goes hand in hand with, I just saw, have you ever read Hatchet from Gary Paulson?
No.
I read Hatchet when I was in, like, grade 4 or 5. I think I was in grade 5. And it, like, sliced a part of my my upbringing out. Like, it was transformative for me to read Hatchet. Hatchet is where I started my interest in survival themes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I would have to say that, like, aside from video games and movies, I got to start with Hatchet. Read Hatchet, read The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Then we're going to play Fallout 3 so that you can kind of, like, build the bridge.
I hope as a genre he's into RPGs.
Oh, man. I can't. Dude. This weekend, okay, because Johnny's made some developmental leaps in the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. It kind of happens like that. Like, he'll just go through, it's almost like a mental growth spurt where, like, he gets stuff now. For example, about 4 weeks ago, maybe 5 weeks ago, instead of taking the Superman action figure and flying him through the air, now he plugs him down onto the table and talks as Superman. So, like, he's voicing Superman's thoughts and feelings and actions.
Right.
And then in the other hand, he brings Batman up on the table. And then Superman and Batman have a conversation that's external of Johnny's consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, I've been running this real simple, simple thing. We build Duplo is like, you know, big blocks for Lego.
Yep.
So I build a little house. And I put a man in the house. And I give him another man. His guys, he call them, right? Go get one of your guys. And he brings him out. I say, bring your guy out to the front door. And he brings him out to the front door. I say, is there a guy in that house? He says, well, I don't know. Well, why don't you knock on the door? He knocks on the door. And then I do this, like, into my arm. Hello, who is it? And I make him talk to him. And we're role playing just a little tiny bit, right? So I can't wait to get him into, like, Mouse Guard and the Built for Kids, Hero Kids, the Built for Kids RPGs to eventually branch out to D&D. I can't wait. So this weekend, I've got a whole one-day campaign set up for him. I have, big pads of paper that used to be at the front of the class?
Yep.
I have one of them that's graph paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this little map drawn on it of this little town. It's got two buildings. And I'm going to give him one of his guys. And you can go in this building or that building. We're looking for an old man. There's an old man in one of these buildings. And all I want him to do, I'll let him find it on the first building he goes to. I want him to take his man and enter the building on the paper and ask me anything about an old man. Right, I'm going to break this down for you. It'll take me like 3 or 4 minutes. Stay with me. After he finds the old man, I have a costume right beside me. It's just like a old shawl thing that I'm going to throw on. And the old man is going to say to him, hello, are you interested in going on an adventure? And of course he's going to be like, yes.
I'm scared.
And I built him this little, foam core board.
Yeah.
I built him a little sword and a shield.
That's funny.
And so the guy's going to be like, well, if you want to go on an adventure, you know, you got to protect yourself. I'm going to give him this little sword, and I'm going to say, follow me. I'll take you to my camp. And so I'm going to set it all up on Friday night. I have a camp set up in the first room that you get to in our basement. And I even, like, made a little fire out of tissue paper and a fan with a light on it.
That's
so
hilarious.
Like, you know, it's like a little camp.
Yeah.
When he gets to camp, there's going to be, I'm going to hold him basically like, stay here. I'll make sure the camp is safe. I'm going to go in the room, like my little room down there.
Yeah.
That's where the camp is. So we're going to go in there. I'm going to go in first, and I got this chain. I'm going to put the chain on me, and I'll be calling him, adventurer, help. And he's going to come in, and I'm going to, like, help me, get me out of here. If he figures out how to do it, it's a little twist tie. All you got to do is undo the twist tie or break the chain. I don't care. Help me. If he helps me, that guy's going to give him a shield.
That's funny.
Sword and shield ready to go.
Yep. Then he can take on anything.
He's going to be like, you've made it to the camp. You helped me. Let me show you where my treasure is. He knows what treasure is. So the last station is in our, like, in his playroom. I'm going to have this tunnel set up, and I got, like, a black garbage bag. I'm going to blow it up and tape it off, and it's going to be a spider, like a big actual spider. And the cave is very spooky. There's a spider in there. Do you think you can fight the spider? Of course he's going to be like, yes! So if he fights the spider, by any means, I don't care what it is. We're working on baseline RPG stuff.
Yeah.
He'll get to crawl through the little tunnel of chairs and blankets to the treasure chest that's like a dollar store treasure chest with a Kinder Egg in it. But that's basic role-playing, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon it'll probably take us like the better part of 40 minutes or something like that.
And then you'll have to level up. Man. What are you going to put your stat point in?
So I want to, then what I want to do, so the whole thing is he's going to name his guy. And I want to use that name next time we play. Then if I can get him to draw that connection that we're playing with the same guy, it's a different adventure, then I'll get a couple of his buddies over from preschool, and I'll be the best dad on the planet. Role-playing games for me, can't wait to get him into role-playing games. There's another game called Brick Wars. It's tabletop miniature warfare using Lego.
Oh, okay.
And you assemble your own dude, and there's like a whole rule
set.
That
might be my speed of tabletop gaming.
Yeah. That I can't wait.
Approximately for ages 6 to 9. Yep, that's good.
Oh,
I'm in.
Can't wait for that. Can't wait for real-time strategy games. My dad.
Yeah,
do
yeah.
you remember
Total Annihilation?
I was going to say Planetary
Annihilation. Yeah, it's so funny that that's the one. Yeah.
Oh, Total Annihilation.
Yeah, with all the little robots and everything.
First, we started playing Red Alert, and my dad didn't really like that one for whatever reason. Me and my brother played it like gangbusters.
What was that stuff called? Tiberium or... I can't remember what that was called.
Is it Spice? No, that was Dune.
Yeah, in the
that you're collecting. Your harvesters are collecting.
Yeah, what's that called? That's probably people.
Man, me and my brother
speaker right now
used to put a piece of paper over the mini map so you can't tell where I am. Come and verify my base. All I have is one power station and one harvester. Now let's go eat dinner. And as soon as you sit in your chair after dinner, it's game on, and you have a million spice. So it's like ultra rush rules. But my dad used to play. What was it called? Total Annihilation.
Yep, yep.
And it was like my dad would be in one room, my brother in another room, and me in the next room. And the fun, man.
Yeah.
Just like screaming. If somebody sent a scout out, you know, like you send a scout to each corner of the map to figure out where everybody is.
Yeah.
And then like my dad would be like, who's blue? Who's blue? Blue, you want an ally? Like, you know, it just like I can't wait for that. He's already playing Minecraft.
Oh, really?
Believe it or not, he doesn't play it so much as it's...
He just walks around in it?
He knows he can get the WSAD going, but to press space at the same time as a two-handed operation.
Yeah.
Then he'll go back to the mouse, and he swings his hands at the dirt, and if he breaks one of the clumps of dirt, both hands come up, and he's like, yes! And like it's in like safe mode or whatever, so there's no bad guys.
Yeah.
But he also figured out how to kill a chicken. And he ran over to it and smacked it to death. And he was, and it, like, they kind of do this, like, and keel over onto their side and then disappear, right? And he was like, I hit the chicken. And I was like, I know. Well, where'd it go? And I was like, I don't want to explain death over Minecraft.
It teleported. That's more of a goldfish thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to explain that over a goldfish.
I was like, you know what? Don't worry about it. Just go hit another
chicken.
You
want a Kinder Egg?
Yeah.
What about movies?
Movies? Won't be until he's older. The transformative ones for me have been Band of Brothers. Like, Take a Swing, right? The Longest Day, Saving Private Ryan, no. Movies? I'm not really a movie guy. Maybe.
I think when it comes to... So I'll spin off of that one.
Yeah.
I really don't know what I want to do for, like, kids shows. Because... I see the type of kid shows that are... Because like, basically my brother-in-law and sister-in-law put Treehouse on. And then it's like, whatever. Rather than having like a specific thing. And I'm sure kids eventually develop a preference. But they'd put... Whenever I was around, they put Treehouse on. And some of the fucking shows on that channel are
mind-numbing.
Well, they're at best they're dreck, and at worst they're like actually I think would like do not harm but a disservice to the kid.
Oh, for sure.
Because even when and it, one of the things that really sticks with me, and I noticed for a little while my niece doing it, and I and other kids just in general doing this, is that even when something good is happening, or even when like they're happy, the characters are whining.
Yeah.
And even when we're happy, we always talk like this. And then like the kids start to talk that way because they're a little sponge, right? And I'm just like, oh, man, that's like a little neurotic piece of my own, but that drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just don't know. I'm not so far on the one side where it's like, I'm only going to allow my baby to listen to Baby Einstein so he can grow up to be. And at the same time, too, it's like, well, I don't want to just vegetate him in front of something that's going to, he's going to pick up, not bad habits, but you know what I mean? Like, because I want to let the kid be a kid, but
yeah.
I really want to be conscious of the types of things that you put him in front of because they'll sponge it up.
We try to be like, we try to keep the shows with some sort of, not moral grounding, but some sort of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like Paw Patrol is his favorite one.
Yeah.
And Paw Patrol is
Thomas
all about
Thomas the Tank Engine. Yeah. That's great. I watched it when George Carlin was the conductor.
You know. Now, what I will say is I've made the very dedicated and very measured effort.
No, Caillou.
No, no.
No.
I've made a very measured effort to, I guess, nurture a fandom for Batman and Iron Man specifically.
Yeah.
And the whole, I think I've told you this, but the whole purpose is like, if you want to be Superman, that's fine, and you can play as Superman, but you will never be Superman. You can be Batman. All you have to do is get really strong, learn lots of martial arts, and get really rich.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do. All you got to do is get rich enough to have cool gadgets and strong enough to beat people up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of the same thing for Iron Man, as opposed to a guy like, you know, the Hulk. You're never going to be the Hulk.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's any...
You can't, like, strive to be, to emulate that.
Yeah, I don't
I guess
don't
you
know
walk
there's...
around and just punch it.
I hope subliminally it goes into his little brain like that, you know, but... Tim Little, Timbo Slice himself.
Oh, Timbo Slice. He's still alive. It's good to know.
Tim is still alive. He issues the following question. Why don't you play Warhammer with your friends?
is that to both of us?
I don't know, but personally, I'm triggered.
Because I don't understand it. And you know what? I will rebut Tim's question with another question.
Yeah.
Why don't you play video games with your friends?
Oh, shit.
Oh.
How does it feel, Tim? I don't play 40K because space guns. And I did. I played 40K while I was in Thunder Bay.
Mm-hmm.
But once I found out about World War II miniature games, I was like, what are these space marines? Out of my life.
It's possible that it's because I haven't played the right tabletop games,
yeah.
But I don't go into tabletop games with an unconscious open mind, because when I see all the stuff and then I see the people with like the 17 page rule book is actually probably pretty small, but
yeah,
like a 170 page rule book, and then they have like the multiple dice out, and then they have like the I can see where if you're really into that type of data, why that would be super interesting for you. For me, it doesn't translate that way.
Sure.
My heavy data games are games like the original, this was almost more passive, but the original XCOM, where it had all the different stats. Now, you couldn't modify them, but I liked that. Or I have a game called East Side Hockey League Manager on my Steam.
I see where you're going, yeah.
And I like managing the minutiae of, you know, my hockey team. Should I put my coach to teach speed versus positioning? I like that. And for other people, it's, you know, finding their position on the board and things like that. To me, it doesn't translate enough to get me through the minutiae. That's why, for me, tabletop gaming hasn't grabbed me yet. And I don't know if it will, because I have to wade through that just to play it. Like, we played Flames of War.
Yeah, Flames of War.
Now, I was in the throes of food poisoning while we played that.
Yeah.
But even if I was okay, I think my limit of a good time peaks at about a 7. You know what I mean? And an average time for me would probably be closer to a 4 or a 3. Just because it's not my cup of tea.
Folks who play tabletop war games would argue that playing is, for a lot of people, less than half the fun.
Because it's more the building,
the modeling, the painting.
And I'm not necessarily creative, but I'm not skilled in that. Like, I watched Curly paint some of his stuff, or you build some of your terrain, and I'm like, if I tried to do that, it would look like dog shit.
Yeah, so, it just doesn't float your boat.
Yeah, it's just
how about
not
that, Tim?
Thing.
How's that
it's
sound?
Just not my thing. But you know what's a good time? Rocket League.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you try that,
it's
Tim?
It's a great time playing with your friends. This is from Marissa. First to you, then to me.
Okay.
For Wyatt, how was the rest of The Hidden Life of Trees? And do you have any other cool tree facts?
So The Hidden Life of Trees, I had a problem, not with that book, but with an influx of books around Christmas time. And I also had like a retail therapy Amazon day. So I bought like 11 books on like botanicals and bitters. And when we do the next Benchcast book club, the book is called The Drunken Botanist.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like The Hidden Life of Trees, but with liquor. And I've got a whole bunch of facts that I'm ready to do that. And, okay, is your question a quick question or is it going to spiral us?
Quick-ish.
Here's the spiral then. I'll do the spiral on my half.
Okay.
One thing I find really funny, and I found this too while listening to Dr. Rhonda Patrick on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yes, oh my God.
So, you know, my wife's a naturopathic doctor, and with that comes a box that she's placed in. Because some people hear the first two syllables of naturopathic doctor, and they think crystal healer,
witch
wacky
doctor.
Quacky. And I call her a witch doctor all the time. But what they don't necessarily pick up on is the fact that to specifically, there's a lot of people who do like a Mohawk weekend course for 4 weeks, and then they can get a similar sounding name.
Sure.
But the reason why licensed naturopathic doctor is important, because it took her 8 years of university anyway, and she has 11 years of university to get that. Where I'm going with this is that people, you know how earlier I was saying that, you know, you can have an opinion on something, but you can't claim that you have an educated opinion if you don't have the education. That's why when my wife said to me, well, what do you think about XYZ medical decisions for the baby? Here's my opinion on the outcome I want, but I don't know the details to get us there. So I won't comment on that part. And, you know, there was even, like, some of my friends who are my friends who really decided that the hill they were going to die on was telling me that, you know, I should, you know, kind of reconsider things because of my wife's line of schooling. And I've always had my backup about that. And in reading this book, The Drunken Botanist, they talk about a lot of, basically, all these different plants that booze is made from, which is actually hilarious. It's awesome. But a lot of the times when they say, you know, cinchona bark was originally tried back in the 1600s, they were always looking for medicinal properties of these plants.
Yeah.
And they ended up also making booze, right? But like cinchona bark, for instance, it makes, you can get quinine from it. And quinine's what gives tonic water that real bitter.
Okay.
And quinine, I'm paraphrasing, so I could be wrong here, is essentially what the cure for malaria is derived from. It's derived from extracting these chemicals from the bark of this tree. Mm. And then when you listen to Dr. Rhonda Patrick talk about all these things and everything like that, and it dials down to nutrition. And Joe's losing his mind. He's like, you know, they really should have like a field of health where rather than, you know, someone comes to see you and you treat a symptom with a pill, they look at everything that's going on, and it's like, motherfucker, they already have that.
It's called the holistic.
And the problem is because that term right there envisions a lady with spaghetti hair, gray hair.
I was just about to say.
Purple shirt with a peace sign on it.
As soon as you say that word, everybody gets all weird about it.
And the reason is that almost every movement or every, group gets painted by its outliers, right? Totally understandable. But I just found that so funny that I, because it got me thinking that way and then confirmed it when listening to that podcast today, that in reading this book, there's so much of medicine and everything like that that at least started from all these plant compounds.
Oh, yeah, like all of it.
Like literally all of it.
All of it, yeah.
And then, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, like health things out there that you look at and you're just like, I don't understand any of this. And I don't feel like it makes sense to me. But then at the same time, we all have no problem saying that boiling the bark of the cinchona tree in water and distilling it down and giving it to people, like, help prevent malaria. And it's still, quinine still used today. And it's just one of those things where it's really funny to me that we have so much technology and so much intelligence, just knowledge and access to knowledge out there. And Joe mentioned it, it's like we still haven't figured out the body yet. We still haven't figured out health yet. And that's the book I'm reading, and I'm going to have a bunch of neat little factoids, kind of like the quinine thing coming from that. I still have to finish the Hidden Life of Trees, but yeah. I started drinking. That's how I get off of every track.
I started drinking about books. Marissa says, for Bill, what would you say drives you during your Brazilian jiu-jitsu training? Is it to push yourself physically, mentally? What gets you on the mat every week? And is Rumble men's only, or are there women training as well? There are totally women training there, and they're super scary. It's like meeting a chick cop. It's like, you know, you just assume that there wouldn't be very many girls there. And then when they show up, you're like, ah, man, what's this chick about? She's there's one woman there particularly who's super skilled, and she's there pretty much every time I go. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you ask. There's definite size differences, but the beauty thing I'm learning about jiu-jitsu is its technique, right? Like, I sunk technique in on a guy this week who was bigger than me for the first time ever, and it was just like, I hit a technique that helped me with a bigger dude. What gets me on the mat? Three things. First of all, I think it is my responsibility to know at least the super basic or fundamental principles of hand-to-hand combat, because I am a dad and a husband. I have people that I need to protect.
Like, and it, you might go Black Friday shopping one day.
Hey, like it or not, it's one of those parts of our humanity, or maybe our culture, that we don't like talking about, that sometimes you just get attacked. And I don't know how well I'd be able to handle myself. I have no idea. But
as long as he's wearing a gi, you're good.
Yeah. No. Don't hold me like that. Hold me like this.
Yeah.
Wait. Sir, I'm not ready.
Sir, if you're gonna try and steal my keys to my car, could you put your hand here and then you put your foot like, okay, now steal my keys.
And step. No. I don't know. Like, I just feel a responsibility to kind of take ownership of my body in that way. Physically and mentally, it's the most taxing thing I've ever been a part of. And when you do things that are difficult, it feels really good, because you're supposed to be doing things that are difficult. You're not supposed to be sitting in an office all day fixing printers in air-conditioned environments with people who are very fakely happy to see you all the time. That's not real life.
That's why I got rid of all my laceless shoes and got like the regular lace-up shoes. And I'll roll around on the floor for 15 minutes a morning trying to put each one on.
Sometimes you got to do things that are really, really detrimental. I think, and the final note about that is that we don't get an opportunity to practice getting the shit kicked out of us. And like I was showing you, Wyatt, tonight, I've got this weird indentation on the top of my ear. And I don't know what's wrong with it, but it hurts a lot now. And it's red. And, you know, the problems I used to have with my body were things like stubbing my toe, or like...
Now you stubbed your ear.
You know, I got a bruise in the middle of my forehead today because somebody... The little bone, the little sticky outy bone on the person's ankle cracked me in the head. Like, I got my nose cracked the other day. Like, it's just these types of things. It's refreshing at a very primal level to, for example, when you stand in front of a guy and you slap hands, there's this monkey thing that happens where you go from, like, we're talking about video games or whatever, you slap bump, and then there's some guys where...
The eyebrows go down.
Yeah, the eyebrows go down. Now I'm looking out the top of my head and breathing heavily and engaging physically. And, you know, here's another thing that I bet you nobody talks about out loud. It feels good to impose my physical will on people. That feels good. It felt really, really good to cinch this choke in last night. I got a choke from standing last night. It was the first time ever. I've been trying this shit for like 6 weeks. Every time I try it. And so like if I try it and then the guy takes me down, the next time we stand up, I try it again.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hit something like that and it works, it feels good to I guess, emote that energy.
And I think the victory is better because you felt the sting of defeat.
For weeks.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is that, you know, there's things we do in our day-to-day, like in our monotony that, you know, kind of sucks sometimes. But at the same time, like, the failure isn't the same.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you don't defend yourself properly, you're going to have to tap. Because if you don't tap, you'll be physically hurt. And there's still pain up until the point you tap, because you tap because you can't take it anymore. Man. And then there's the mental defeat of tapping. So that's a hell of a lot different than, you know, not getting exceeded expectations on your performance review at the office. You know, oh, I've only successfully met expectations. Oh, that's disappointing. Yeah, it's not like your boss goes, okay, well, and like starts choking you out in the middle of your performance review.
There's... Like, I remember the first two times I went and walking in thinking, like, I wrestled through school. I did jiu-jitsu in college. So, okay, let's see what's going on here. And getting that tournament, just getting rolled. And there's, like, I've never felt more humble than, like, the way I look at it is when I tap on your leg and I'm essentially issuing you a question or a plea, I'm asking you to let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do, I'm almost thankful in the way that you didn't kill me,
yeah,
or that you didn't break my leg.
Yeah.
There's a joke with one of the guys, Mikhail, at Jits, where he'll like, if we're rolling technique, like we're not actually rolling, we're just working technique. And if the technique ends in him mounting me or him like being on top of me or whatever, he'll feign like he's ground and pound or like feeding me an elbow or something. And I, like, right around the holidays, I was like, dude, you right now have the power to ruin Christmas for my whole family. Like, all it would take is for you to just say, fuck it, I'm going to just drill him. As soon as I flip him over, he'll never expect it, and I'm just going to sink this elbow into his skull. But they don't.
Yeah.
And so every Tuesday night and Thursday night, I'm like, hey, guys, thanks for not ruining my week. And it's just like, I don't know. It's a combination of the humble and the strength. It's good stuff.
I'm going to jump Robbie's question in here before I forget.
It's next. Yeah. Robbie. It just says Robbie's question.
Oh, good. Perfect. You see, we're at kindred spirits again.
Connected.
Robbie's question is, why is sex banned on TV but violence isn't?
Easy, because it has... dicks in it.
What about, like, if a guy got his dick chopped off? What if Jesse ripped a guy's dick off? Could you talk about it on the news?
Yeah, but you can talk about sex on the news, too. Hmm. Because news is not TV. I think he's referring to, like in
mainstream media TV shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, like fictional TV shows.
I think, yeah, you know, and that's weird. Like, I don't know. That's one of those things that, like, I've heard that argument before. And when you hear... I'm going to get defensive, but it's like, not that I'm saying that the argument is a canned argument, but it's one of those things where you can only phrase it one of so many ways. And people will use that sometimes as like, as an answer to another debate that you're having. So I've heard that before, but I've never really given deep thought into that. It's a good question because it is silly, right? Because I don't know. And
I have the answer.
I'll take his question one step further.
Yep.
The level, because if you look at like Two and a Half Men or something like that.
I have the literal answer.
Okay, you give the literal answer. No, wait, no, yeah, save it.
Okay,
if it's going to be like a mic drop, then
yep.
I want to get my meandering point out first.
Okay, go.
But like if you listen to Two and a Half Men or any of those TV shows where there's a lot of innuendo and stuff like
Yeah.
It's like they're getting away with it. You know, it's like we're talking dirty, but we're not talking dirty, you know? And it's like they're getting away with it. And it's like if you can go that far as to hint towards... or be real strong with your innuendo, then it's like just stop skirting around and just say what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I guess without the innuendo, it's not funny. But then when you watch TV you watch a TV show or any movie with like war or terrorists or anything like that in it, like there'll be gore, not just violent, but graphic gore.
Yeah.
And then there won't be that same level of graphic. Like you'll see people make out or something like that in a show, or maybe in a movie you might see a boob or the side of a guy's ding dong once in a while. But when it happens, you're like, whoa, did they show that guy's pecker on TV on a movie?
Yeah.
And then like seven guys get their heads blown off and you're like, oh, okay. You know, and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
It's weird, right? Because what we're saying is if one should be worse than the other. But it's just one of those things where it's like,
but what's worse? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like what
worse is
worse?
A weird word.
Yeah, in what way is it worse?
Because you're automatically assuming that either one is bad.
I mean, either one could be bad.
I would say
that violence should be looked at worse. Because, you know, that's the thing is that violence usually ends poorly. And unless it's...
Usually? What about for the victor?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, as an overarch, right?
Because sometimes, I mean, it's a 50-50 split.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you're...
It ends poorly for the guy that gets his head kicked in.
Oh, yeah. Like, if the protagonist is walking down the street and he gets jumped and he ends up winning, then that's a good thing in the storyline. It's a good thing, but it's still bad for the guys who got beat up. But if you have two main characters, you know, whoever the Hollywood people are nowadays that just do it on screen or something like that, that's not bad.
But, I mean, philosophically, too, like...
That's good violence, for both people.
Violence can also be, like, really, really, really good. And, like, almost unquestionably good. Like, let's use the philosophical example here, because what we're drilling down to is war just? Because it has to be either good or not good for us to determine whether or not it should be allowed on TV. So, something like a war movie, something like shooting Nazis, that's unequivocally good, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like... Even, and that's the thing, I think it's a good thing that we're taking it deep, but at the same time, even just on the surface, you can watch, it's funny how movies can get away with things more than TV shows, but we were watching a TV show, and I can't remember what TV show we were watching, but a guy got shot in the head.
Yeah.
And, like, blood spray, bullet hole in the head, dead on the ground. Not, like, super gory graphic, like a Rob Zombie movie, gory. But dude had a brain hole, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, and then they hint about sex. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's like, you just watched a person die violently and saw the cause of that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can see them hinting, or right before they cut to commercial, they from behind you see the girl open her shirt up or something like
yeah.
that. Or the guy takes his shirt off and you know where it's going, going. But they can show a guy's brains flying out because he got shot in the head. It's weird, right? I don't have the answer to it, and I feel like I could argue against either point.
Here's the literal answer.
What's the answer?
Why is violence acceptable on TV but sex is not? Because our society is based on a number of rules that are ancient. Some of those rules include the following. Sex is morally kind of wrong. Kind of. Not maybe wrong, but should be kept private morally.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Violence.
It's not part of the public sector.
Yep. Violence is definitely not. Violence is definitely celebrated. For crying out loud, we have national holidays that celebrate the
they should have a national sex day.
How slick would that be? Oh, that was a double entendre. Get that one.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. I don't have an answer for that.
And that's why, man, because one is seen as either maybe not morally wrong, but mm-hmm. wrong in the sense that it shouldn't be shown.
One's more private. Yeah, sex would be more private and violence would be more public.
Yeah, because
if you're going to be violent and resort to violence, either offensive or defensive, you want to show anyone who you would bring violence to that you're capable of it, or anyone who would bring violence to you is capable of it. Unless, maybe if you're really good at sex, you want everybody out there to know you're good at it too. Maybe it should be in more public forum. I don't know why I talk like a combination of Homer Simpson and Jerry Seinfeld. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like it's funny because nowadays especially, like sex is more prevalent on TV, but they dance around it so much. Where it's like, and Two and a Half Men is the perfect example about it.
Yeah.
And I hated that show. It was like one, for a while, it was the most popular show on TV. And you had this nerdy dipshit And then this other guy who's like such a, like a, you know, like
he was a stud, man.
but it was Charlie Sheen, for God's sake. Like, that guy doesn't even have an ab. And he was like supposedly landing people like on a daily basis. And they'd basically just sit there and go back and forth talking about having sex, but without mentioning the fact that they're having sex. And it's just like, oh my God, just if it wasn't for the skirting around it, it wouldn't be entertaining, because otherwise it would just be boring. It'd just be normal, right? But it's weird. I don't have an answer for that.
Last two questions are both from Andrew Lynn.
Okay.
Also from Adventure Archives.
I'm very excited to see what the last question is.
Second last question is, Bill, you have to eat one. Which do you choose?
I'm already a fan of this question.
Chicken feet, pork brains, beef tripe, or fish head? The edible bits like the fish cheeks, the meat, and the eyes. And I have my answer right now is a fish head. So long as, because it has been declared as such, the edible bits, like the fish cheeks, the meat, and the... Okay, so not the eyes.
All the other parts are edible as well. You're like, you can eat chicken feet, you can eat pork brains, you can eat beef tripe.
Oh, yeah, no, he's referring to the edible bits of the fish head. I've had fish cheeks before. Like, I've had...
Yeah, they're like the best.
It's like popcorn chicken fish.
Yeah.
I've had them multiple times in Newfoundland.
Okay, but let's not let you modify the fish heads. If you're going to eat those, in this scenario, if you're going to eat those fish cheeks, you got to eat the head meat and the eyeballs too.
I would defect and go live in Slovenia.
No, you have to do it. You have to. They eat, the national dish of Slovenia is fish eye soup. they don't even water it down with fish cheeks. It's just all
fish
eyeballs.
Eyes and goop.
Yeah, I know. It's like you're just looking at an audience.
Probably tripe, because that's the closest thing to food, right?
Out of all of those...
it's like cat food, essentially.
You know what?
My dog used to eat tripe.
I made a recipe called tripa alla romana, and I would put that in the top
I can't
five
even
foods.
Talk about this too long. It's making my stomach turn upside down.
You have a busted ear. You can't turn your nose up at it.
I can and will.
You can't turn your ear up at it because it's busted. Tripa alla romana is one of the best, so basically...
All of my feelings.
I know the answer to this question before I ask it, but have you ever had mussels?
I have, yeah.
And what do you think of them?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, imagine I'd
rather have roast beef.
You're eating mussels, but they taste a little bit more like... Everything tastes like chicken, but they taste more like chicken than seafood.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Okay, so last...
In a spaghetti sauce with friggin' bacon in it. And chickpeas and Parmesan cheese. It's delicious.
No, it's not, I'm afraid.
I've made everything but the pork brains. I wouldn't eat the pork brains just because of prions and shit.
That's totally why.
Oh, you mean I eat this food and now I can't remember geography? Oh, okay, yeah, no, I'm not taking that risk.
Final question. This is a multi-part question, and I wanted to save it for last because it'd be kind of weird to answer. From Andrew Lynn, final question.
Okay.
Here are the three parts of the question.
I love this.
One, do you have a van? Do you have a big van you can use to smuggle us across the border? No, I have a truck with a tonneau cover on it, so as long as you duck down in there and don't make any noise.
I did fit all three of them into my car.
Short answer is yes.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I have a car.
Short answer is yes, and just be quiet at the border.
Yeah, exactly. And make sure Robbie shaves, because he always gets pulled over when he doesn't shave.
If they ask him, is this your dad? Just smile and nod. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I'm older than him, but it is definitely my dad.
So here is the second part of the three-part. What are your thoughts on the Trumpocalypse?
Since 1997, when this election was called, 80% of the conversations in my office at work involve Donald Trump. So I'm at the point where I honestly don't give a shit anymore, because it's been done to death. So the feeling of it is gone. Like, you know, when you could sit there and hold a block of an ice cube in your hand, and it'll get to the point where it'll gradually hurt more and more and more and more.
Yep.
Eventually you just won't feel it anymore. The pain hasn't gone away. You can't feel it as much. That's where I'm at when it comes with Donald Trump. Because I'm in finance, all of my questions aren't about feelings or thoughts or emotions or anything like that around social issues. It's strictly about dollars. And the thing is that people will complain when their gas prices go up, but then they get mad when their portfolios go down because gas prices have, or oil prices have gone down.
Yeah.
People will pat themselves on the back for eating organic, but they'll buy mutual funds that have, you know, companies like Monsanto in them.
Yeah.
People will...
What a joke.
People will bitch and cry about Walmart putting mom and pop shops out, but they buy a Canadian dividend portfolio that's all full of dividend-paying corporations like Canadian Tire or the banks and things like that. People will bitch that the banks make too much money, but they won't invest in the banks so they can make money too. So people's business sense goes against everything they believe in their own lives. It's one of those dichotomies and hypocrisies that the majority of people have, or at least are okay with.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't shop at Walmart. I supported local. But you're not investing local in your portfolio. So in a sense, you've put yourself in a position to work against your best interest in one of two ways. You either are betting against mom and pop shops and hoping that Walmart and other companies like that do well so your portfolio goes up, or you're not supporting the companies that you hold that will fluctuate in value based on like their earnings and things like that.
Yeah.
So I've talked a lot in my profession about the business side of it, and all the analysts and everything like that say that the things he plans on doing should be good for business. When it comes to my social sense, I've shortened down my social reach. I don't have social media as much anymore. I consider Brian, Andrew, and Robbie my friends, and they live in Ohio and Indiana. So, I mean, in terms of international reach, I guess I wouldn't consider it international to the States, but in a sense it is.
Oh, it totally is.
At the same time, I care about them because they're in my first ring of social circle. But when it comes to outside influence, unless we're going to war or it really shakes up the economy, and it could, in things that will affect my day-to-day, I'm keeping out of the news. I'm keeping out of reports and everything like that. And I remember saying right after the election, when a lot of people are like, well, now our lives are over. One, we made it through George W. Bush. And
yeah.
Two, just because the president has changed or a political leader has changed or he has views that you don't agree with or that, you know, unless they're directly affecting you, and maybe they are because I haven't looked into it enough, but you don't have to be a different person the day after the election than you were the day before it. And where problems, because that's the thing, if I stood up in the middle of this room right now and started telling everybody to act differently, they don't have to. But if I get up and I act a certain way, either full of bravado or I start threatening people or scaring people, it might make them act a certain way.
Sure.
Remember the fact that you have personal choice in the way you carry yourself, the actions that you put out, the influence that you place upon yourself, your situation, and other people, and control that part of it. You can't change the things he says or the things he does, but I would imagine things that you, Bill Dungy, say to me would impact me a lot more than the tripe that would come out of our political leader's mouth. Obviously, two different people, but if you and Curly and the people I have day-to-day one-on-one contact with are supportive people, and that's why you're my friends, or care about me, and you do that to the people around you as well, that should trump anything that he does. That doesn't mean that at the same time the shit he says or the plans he's making or the policies he wants to put in place or the people that he's put into position should all be ignored. But at the same time, I still think the decisions you make, the people you touch in your day-to-day, is far more powerful than supposedly the most powerful office in the world.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. Here's the thing. I don't know what I think about Trump. Do you know what?
That's the same thing. Yeah, exactly.
One thing that this has really illuminated for me, I don't know too much about what he's actually about.
Yeah, because all we get it from is the news.
Man, I go on Reddit, right? And the first thing I see is it was like several hours after the inauguration. Trump has removed gay rights and this, that, and the other thing from the White House website. And then I'm like, wow, that's
bold.
That is unexpected.
Was it true?
Dig a little deeper. Every time a president takes the office, the old website gets wiped and the new website gets put in. So the old hyperlinks that people were clicking on aren't there anymore.
Gotcha.
Now there's different hyperlinks.
So while in a roundabout way true.
Oh, and he did definitely remove some of the terminology.
Mm.
But the trouble is, you'll see that, and then 4 hours later, you'll see something about, you know, some trade deal that's going to... I don't know enough about what's going on for me to... This is a perfect example. One of the guys at JITS said... we were talking about this, obviously, right? He says, so tell me, are you a conservative or a liberal? I was, neither, really. I mean, like,
Do I have to be one or the other?
And I was like, I don't really like picking a team, if that's okay. And he's like, well, I'm not picking a team. I'm just saying, like, are you conservative? I'm like, well, if you pick a team, like, if I said I'm a conservative, now all of a sudden I have to hate what liberals do.
Yeah.
Because
if you're in the States, that's way more pronounced than it is.
Because we're
here.
In a camp now.
Yeah.
Right? And I'll tell you another thing that really bugs the shit out of me. The big thing on Reddit today is that on Amazon, the number one bestseller is George Orwell's 1984 because of the whole alternative facts thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because of, you know, the guy came out and just bluntly just lied. Okay. Okay. Sure. Where the hell was everybody talking about 1984 when Snowden came out?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
When they were like, hey, guess what, everybody? By the way, we're spying on everyone.
That's the team thing, though. That's the team thing, because that's the same reason why...
That was in Obama, man.
No, that's what I mean.
You know, and it's like...
And again, I'm getting my facts secondhand, so I could easily be...
And I trumpeted Obama for being a good president.
So I still say...
He's
probably one of the best... The idea, the caricature of what you expect a president to be, for me as an outsider who... I don't give a fuck about that kind of stuff. But for me, he embodied, at least in the way he presented himself, and he spoke very vaguely, but he spoke very pointed, said good things. About stuff. And I was like, okay. And then you see Donald Trump coming in, and you're like, that guy's a fucking clown. But at the same thing is like, I definitely respect the idea that he says, from now on, it's going to be America first, because the whole America first thing comes up in my office all the time. And it's like, well, if the leader of my country said, we are going to sell out our interests and make everybody around us happy, you'd be a little worried about that. The problem is that when he says something like that, it also all the baggage of everything else he's ever done or everything else that he says he stood for gets thrown behind it. But it's the whole team thing, and I don't understand why it's so different there than it is here. Maybe it's we're a bit more of a melting pot, or not a mosaic, and they're a bit more of a melting pot, and maybe it's because their elections go on for 17 fucking years, like. You know, a cicada goes into hibernation and comes out, and they still haven't voted yet. Like, it's just, it's more palpable there, and that whole idea of, like, you know, conservative and liberal and that thing. Now, here's the thing, like, you have to, and that's, maybe this is why, because as far as I understand, even Robbie couldn't explain this to me. He's like, our shit's so fucked up. But as far as I understand it, you have to register with a party to be able to actually vote for that party, at least in the primaries. Maybe it's different for the general presidential election.
I don't know.
Here, I can walk into a building ready to vote red, and on the way to the booth, change my mind and vote blue. And it doesn't matter. Just tick a box. And we talked about this in our election episode. What if I'm 100%? So, because we're going to have to vote soon for our provincial election.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, exactly. What if I'm liberal on social things and conservative on economic things? I would have to vote.
That's pretty much where I stand.
That's where I am too.
Yeah.
And the thing is like, I absolutely will tout the flag of, you know, equal rights for men and women, and equal rights for different races and different, you know, different sexual orientations. That shouldn't matter. Like, that shouldn't even be a topic of conversation in political housing. But I'm with that. You know, we should be humanitarian. We should be peacekeepers and things like that. I get that. But when you tell me you're going to put the country $30 billion in debt, kind of have a problem with that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, but you can only vote for party, person, or platform. You can't say, I want Joe Jones leading the country, but I really like Susie Smith's economic platform.
Yeah.
But I really like Tim Tebow's this thing. You can't pick and choose. You have to vote all for one.
That's where my sentiment comes from about I'm kind of done with that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, it's difficult for me to, because even then, just by voting, you're putting yourself in the camp.
Exactly.
And I don't know if that's the right way to go about things anymore. I don't know. Like,
and does it even matter?
For example, man, like, put it this way. We sit down at my dinner table.
Yeah.
We're making a big decision right now. Mm-hmm. We're going to make a big financial decision to the tune of maybe $15,000, $16,000. You know, big...
You don't have to make my kid's birthday gift that expensive.
Big, huge amount of debt that we're going to incur, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
That's a conversation that we have over 3 or 4 weeks. You're going to buy a new car. Let's use that. You know, whatever new cars are worth, 16 grand, 20 grand, I don't know what they're worth. You're going to buy a new car. That's a conversation that we have, and we might even bring in other people. I might bring in my parents who have bought a couple new cars and a couple used cars and get their opinion.
Yep.
Then we might go to the dealership and ask them, well, what do you guys think? I might put it out to the DB crowd.
Don't listen to us. We're idiots.
But you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's not this, like, whoever makes the most in our house goes, we're buying a new car on Tuesday because that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is going to serve as a pretty good segue into the third part of his question, too, because you were... saying about the whole America first thing, and obviously that was a strong, strong theme in his inauguration speech.
Yep.
Andrew's last question. Do you support building a wall and making the U.S. pay for it? Question mark.
Building a wall between Canada and the U.S.?
Is he doing that? How hilarious would that be?
Oh, there's probably 1,000 news articles saying that's happening. Does he mean... The wall that
he's
talked about between Mexico and the U.S.?
The wall, yeah.
Does his question say making the U.S. pay for it or making Mexico pay for it?
Making the U.S. pay for it.
Oh, okay.
Because he's signed the thing today or whatever. I couldn't believe it. I read it and it was like...
That's just so stupid. You know what the thing is?
He's actually going
to
do it?
I still go back to that Kenny versus Spenny episode where Kenny's whole plan is to be a terrible... who makes the better soldier.
Yeah.
And Spenny jumps right into soldier mode. And then Kenny just is a slob. And then he eventually works his way around to be an average soldier. And then Spenny's been giving it 110% from the get-go. But Kenny looks better because he's grown as a soldier.
Yeah.
I figured he was going to say the most ridiculous, outlandish, stupid crap he could and gradually get to whatever the ceiling of his statelymanship is. And then everyone would be like, wow, he's really grown. From a 2 to a 6... But he's grown from a 2 to a 6 rather than someone who's just been a flat 8. But that's just cartoony.
Here's the thing. Okay, you got to be careful about how you say this, right?
The problem is that you, when you say something in a forum such as this or on the internet or anything like that, context is lost. The words are there forever. And unless you go back and edit them after... you know, giving some thought to it.
Yeah.
You always end up opening yourself up for being taken wrong or for being wrong.
I can understand where the idea comes from.
As a metaphor, yes.
No, not for the wall. For the idea of America first.
Oh, absolutely. I can't fault that.
I can get that.
Even if that may potentially harm our situation, I can absolutely respect that.
I don't know if logically... and reasonably, the best way to go about that is building a wall.
It unequivocally is not.
You know what I'm saying?
But absolutely.
When
I can understand. If that was a metaphor, I get it.
Yeah, like
when he's talking about an actual structure. Are you even fucking serious?
when that whole America First thing came out of his mouth, I even saw the backlash online about wall. You know, how dare you say this, that, and the other about him even saying that? And I'm like, well... Recently, like, I've kind of done my own America First, if you want to call it that. Like, I've reestablished some of my some of the ways that I want to help in my community.
Yeah, we talked about that with like the volunteering thing.
From the large to the small. Now I just want to do a garden in my front lawn so that people can grab vegetables when they're out on a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't necessarily see a problem with fixing the problems at home and making a super dedicated effort mm-hmm. to patching the holes in the ship before we set sail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But building a wall, I mean, I don't know if I'd really, and from a very specifically logical and reasonable place,
yeah.
I don't know if I could take somebody seriously if they sat across from me and said that, yeah, that's the way we got to go about doing things. Because I'm like, well, how, like, okay, so like, let's look at it reasonably. Well, you're going to build it 18 feet tall. So what happens when there's little Mexican hot air balloons going over that thing? Like, you know what I mean?
It reminds me of the episode of South Park when they're like doing the tele fundraiser or something. We need to put extra propulsion jets on the Faith Mobile 3000.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to build little balloon defenses. The thing is, okay, imagine you, you know, you've undergone a transformation health-wise and you started eating better. Now imagine you went to a nutritionist who was 380 pounds and he has a black foot because he's got diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look at a country that has skyrocketing debt. You know, and that could be either one of our countries. Violence at home, like Chicago and gun violence and everything like that at home, riots,
massive
things
violence,
like that.
Yeah.
Going around the globe, sticking their nose in everybody else's business and telling them how it's going to be. It would be just like me telling you, you know what, dude, you really, really should like do something with your kitchen. Like you should clean that up. And you come to my house and all my carpets smell like cat piss. You know, it's like, what the fuck is this guy talking about telling me what I should do? I can respect the metaphor of, you know, we're going to build a wall type thing where you don't want to be isolationist because then you're North Korea. But I can understand, like how you said, patching up the holes in the ship before we set sail. You know, I don't understand why everyone allows and why America views itself as the world police, but at the same time seems to be so faulted in ways at home. And that's true of every country. But it's just no one relishes injecting themselves in other world business and holding themselves up, not necessarily just by other people, but holding themselves up as the gold standard when, you know, there's poverty and all kinds of problems at home. So I absolutely, if I just look at the micro when it comes to America first and fixing the problems at home, and then once we have that all sorted out, let's go back and let's honestly be proud of our education levels on a global standard. Let's get the standard of living up for everybody at home. You know, let's get our issues as a country solved, and then let's go and bring those virtues to everyone else. The problem is that they're focusing more on bringing the virtue, and there's none left at home. So if that gets solved, I think that would be a net win for America. Can it be done, and can he be the one who does it?
Probably not.
Probably not. More than likely not. And then you figure everything else that he does and says, and it's like, okay. If I ignore all the dumb shit he says and then think he can do an insurmountable task, if you do that, yeah, sure, good on you. But I don't know. I can only side with him from that, and I don't think that he's the one who should be doing it.
At
I just don't
day,
give a fuck anymore.
Yeah,
that's it. My official opinion is I don't have one. I don't give a shit.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
The sun's going to explode one day. Hopefully not before I get drunk off of at least 3 plants that I fermented in my basement.
I got stuck last night in like a internet space loop where I was looking up... Stone Cold Sober. I was looking up the biggest known black holes and what would happen if you got near one, or like, I don't know, what would happen if, like,
will this make my dick bigger?
Oh man, it's just like when you start looking at stuff like that, you know what it started? I saw a picture of some crazy spacecraft flew right close to Saturn and then turned that shit backwards and took a picture of us. and we're just this like pixel of blue, and I was like, oh my god, I don't matter.
No, you know what? I think that's one of the things that we all value ourselves, and you should value yourself, because at the end of the day, you're number one. You gotta look out for number one. But at the same time, I don't think we realize how insignificant we are on so many different levels of insignificance. If we all got real humble about our own insignificance, I think people would chill the fuck out a little bit.
That's right, folks. Sometimes space rocks can just fuck your whole planet. My name is Bill. I'm recording at the Devil's Bench, but I'm gonna go home and eat a couple eggs and probably play some Banish before I go to bed. Who are you?
I am extremely proud of myself that I didn't poop myself in the middle of the episode because I ate some expired zesty cheese Doritos. Unequivocally the worst of the Dorito family, by the way.
Incorrect. And can we please have this discussion on the next podcast, because that is...
Oh, the top Doritos?
Yeah.
We should rank them. Okay, here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
How much longer do we have for the music?
You have 1 minute and 50 seconds.
Okay, so all perfect. So what we're going to do...
Yeah.
...is we're going to look at the normal Doritos flavors in Canada, at least. So not like...
Ketchup.
Matcha green tea.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll include ketchup on there because...
No, that's not... Continue. Before.
I'll,
okay.
I'll include it on there because I can walk into the store and buy it right now.
Okay.
So I'll include that. I want your three best and your three worst in order Doritos flavors.
Next week or right now?
Oh, next week. It'd be too hard to do it.
Because I was going
to
say... Like,
yeah, I want to put some thought
this
into it.
This is a deep hole
if
we're digging.
If we ever do like the gun control episode, I'm not going to prepare any points.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go from the hip. But when it comes to
Doritos... from the hip...
But when it comes to Doritos, I need to do my research, son. Do they make salt and vinegar Doritos? They should.
Go find us online, The Devil's Bench on Facebook or The Benchcast. Move to Canada and start.
Actually,
jiu-jitsu, I
have a question since I have time.
Yep.
I don't
have 20 seconds.
I don't have to smuggle them across the border because we had a gentleman's agreement that if and when the Donald got in, they're coming to live in my basement. So I'm ready, and we're gonna eat kimchi.